Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. The main focus of today's show, folks, it will be what is to become of some of the WWE superstars after WrestleMania is over. And I think it's important that we do take a look at it because, as you know, the WWE has a habit of making WrestleMania somewhat of a closing of a season type thing. And after WrestleMania, we start to see some people cut. We start to see some people pushed. We start to see some people maybe cycled down. We maybe even see one or two people leave on their own accord. So we're going to take a good hard look today at what's going to happen to a lot of the major people and some of the minor people in the WWE after WrestleMania is over. And I think the first one that we'd like to get to, because there's been a lot of controversy about this, is Brock Lesnar. Now, I've been reading that Brock Lesnar's contract is up. He has not re-signed, and we are not really going to know whether he re-signed or not until after WrestleMania, or at least after his match at WrestleMania, with the prevailing attitude being, if he loses to Almas, Brock Lesnar is gone. If he beats Almas, Brock Lesnar has signed a contract. Well, that may well be true. But I'm still having a hard time believing, even if Brock Lesnar doesn't sign the contract, that he would lose to Almas, and I'll tell you why. If he doesn't sign the contract, that doesn't mean he won't take a per-match agreement or whatever. And if he's forced against his will to lose to Almas, and it's going to be a 20-second match if that happens, the chances of him coming back are slim to none. So I don't think the WWE would do that. I really don't. I do think Brock Lesnar will probably sign another contract. I don't think it's going to be a long-term contract. I think we're probably looking at a year-to-year type thing, so maybe 1 year. I think they still have a little bit more to do with Brock Lesnar, and I think, and this is maybe the key point, I think maybe for the first time in a long time, Brock Lesnar's actually having some fun with professional wrestling. I think before this, Brock Lesnar was one of those guys who said, yeah, I'll show up. Yeah, I'll do the 5 minutes. Yeah, I'll do the interview. I'll bounce up and down while Paul Heyman hypes me up. And just give me the money, let me fly back home, and I don't care what's going on in wrestling, and I don't care to even know. But with this run a little bit, I think Brock Lesnar is starting to get a better feel for actually how lucky he was to be a pro wrestler. And enjoying maybe what's going to be the last couple of years of his career or whatever. And I don't think he's ready to go out on a losing end right now, and I don't think he's really ready to go out at all. I think Brock Lesnar fully realizes that in the shape he's in and the age that he's at, he can do another year or two easily. He only really does, what, 4 matches a year, tops? It's not like he's on every program. It's not like he's, you know, wrestling house shows and going on tours. He's not doing any of that. So showing up a few times a year for Brock Lesnar doesn't sound like anything major. And I'm fairly sure that he will re-sign his contract. Now, will he be a major player? Will he be someone that's going to be in the title picture? I doubt it. I doubt that. I think that Brock Lesnar doesn't want to be. anymore. I think Brock Lesnar is more content to be that guy that shows up almost, we discussed this on the show many times, that you need a guy. For a while, it was The Undertaker. In ECW, it was 911. You need a guy who, when his music hits, no matter who's in the ring, whether they be a champion or a schlub, you know, they're getting their ass kicked. They're definitely getting their ass kicked. And I think Brock Lesnar is going to be that guy. I really do. I think Brock Lesnar is going to end up being that guy that surprises people once in a while with an appearance, comes back, it's no big deal to lose to him because everybody's going to, and then he just goes away again, doesn't contend for a title, doesn't win a title. Now, I know there's been a lot of people saying, oh, I see a swerve coming where Paul Heyman's going to go back to Brock Lesnar. I'm not so sure I see that. I'm not so sure the WWE wants to return to that, and I'll tell you why I don't know if they want to return to that. Because Paul Heyman's proven himself to be too valuable that way to just literally be a guy that comes out and says exactly the same thing every single week. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman, and I am the advocate for the reigning defense, whatever. We've heard that. Paul Heyman's worth is more than that, and I think they realize that now. And I don't think they'll go back to that. So I think Lesnar's future probably after WrestleMania is going to be one of, you know, he shows up when he wants to. He handpicks his opponents, which he's always done, and wins the majority of his matches, and that's it. I don't think he's going away just yet, Mike. I could be wrong, but I don't even think Brock Lesnar is one of those guys that if he is going away, is going to go away laying down to a guy like Omos.
No, he ain't going to do that. No, it'd be more likely that he lay down to Roman Reigns or somebody like that, or if they decide to do what we thinking they're doing with Jey Uso at one point, making him a main event guy, he may lay down, or hell, he may at some point lay down to what's his name, the young guy. You know, he put his cowboy hat on, you know.
Oh, yeah, Austin Theory, yeah.
Austin Theory. So, yeah, and I agree with you. He's that guy. When you need somebody to show up to scare the shit out of somebody, don't matter if he wins or loses, you're going to get your ass beat. That's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I think that role suits him very well. Now, Derek in the chat room saying, you know, shouldn't he probably put over Omos and just move on? Well, normally I would agree. Here's why I do not agree. Omos had that. You had that chance with Omos. Did you make Bobby Lashley put him over? No, you didn't. So Omos has already been defeated. Omos is already a guy who showed I can get up the chain this far, but I can't beat guys like Bobby Lashley. So, listen, if he was undefeated, I would side with Derek's way of thinking and say, well, you're better off making Omos a star than hanging on to Lesnar, but you've already showed that Omos is not a big deal. He's lost to Bobby Lashley. It's only a matter of time till he starts losing to smaller opponents. Remember the Kane syndrome. When Kane first showed up, he was beating two people at once. He took out, you know, people like, they were toys. They were hitting him in the head with 3-foot-long, supposedly steel wrenches, and it was nothing. Mankind dusted. Everybody ran across dusted. And they were doing that for a purpose, and the purpose was we're setting him up for the Undertaker. No one touched Kane until the Undertaker. Well, you didn't do that with Omos. If you still had Omos running on all cylinders, totally undefeated, I would say maybe this is the guy they're setting him up for, Brock Lesnar. Maybe he will squeak by Brock Lesnar. But then what's next for Omos if he does? Cody Rhodes? That's going to be a match you want to see? No. Who else is there left? See, Almost has a problem, and the problem, we'll get to what Almost's future is going to be next, I suppose. Almost's problem is this. He doesn't have any opponents. Where does he go from here? He can't really hang in the ring with people who are legit wrestlers. So he's got to mostly go with the power guys. And the power guys are who? Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. That's about it. Is anybody chomping at the bit to see Almost versus, I don't know, AJ Styles or Kevin Owens or whoever? No. Nobody wants to see that. So you got a problem with Almost, and that problem is he does not have any opponents. So I do think, Tom, that it's probably going to be a Brock Lesnar victory, and we'll talk about what Almost's future is in a minute. But what's your thoughts on the Lesnar situation after WrestleMania?
Well, first and foremost, call me a wrestling traditionalist, but I don't care for when the writers have this huge character and they make his gimmick that he's undefeated. You pigeonhole yourself as riding yourself as undefeated, and then once you get beat, you're finished. Then a Rusev, Goldberg, Kurt Angle, the list goes on. I don't particularly like, and I think they ruined Almost. And then when you pigeonholed him to be the undefeated monster. Okay, well, once he got defeated, where do you go from there? They wrote him off TV for a while. Then they bring him back, and supposedly he's unless they bring him back for WrestleMania versus Brock Lesnar, and the Hurt Business jumps in and just beats the hell out of Brock Lesnar, and it ends in a no contest, Brock Lesnar gets written off TV for a while, and then the Hurt Business runs through some people, and then starts talking crap about how they beat everybody. That would be the time to return Brock Lesnar and put them in a cage, or put them in in some kind of like gimmick match.
See, I think the real problem, and again, let's stick with Brock Lesnar for a minute. I do think he'll re-sign. I do think he'll be a part of the WWE. Brock Lesnar can tease all he wants. I might not re-sign. Maybe I'll go get some big Tony Khan money. He ain't going there. And I'll tell you why. He barely would work for Triple H. When it was announced that Vince McMahon was stepping down, Brock Lesnar initially said, I'm not working. Unless Vince McMahon's there and I'm working. So you're going to tell me he's going to go to some strange company? There's no way. There's no way. Not happening. I think he'll stick around where he knows he can call his shots. He can do what he wants. He can get the big payday. So I think he'll stick around, Todd. I don't see Brock Lesnar going anywhere, at least for the next year, until maybe next WrestleMania.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Brock Lesnar, like you said, I'm thinking the same thing. He's not going anywhere. This year's WrestleMania, he's going to probably re-sign a new contract, probably, and do like the year-to-year contract.
Yeah, now, Derek was talking about making Almost that guy that, is going to get your ass kicked when the music hits. Here's why you can't do it, because he's a heel. Nobody wants to see that guy. What I'm talking about is the guy that you say, damn, all these heels are running roughshod over the company, and nobody seems to be able to beat them, and nobody seems to be able to shut them up. And you always have that one guy that you're like, oh, well, that guy's going to do it. The WWE used to have Andre the Giant. No matter how pushed you were, Andre the Giant was going to beat you. Fans knew it. And it didn't even hurt the heat of the heel that took the loss, because it's just, well, everybody loses to Andre. So it's no crime to lose to Andre. So the top guys, Ernie Ladd and John Studd and all of the top heels that they were pushing to the very, very moon, They all lost to Andre. They all lost to Andre. Then came the age of, like, The Undertaker, where it was The Undertaker. He was a heel initially. When he turned face, when you heard the bells ringing, everybody shit their pants and was like, well, it doesn't matter who this is. They're going to get their ass kicked. He may not always win, but you're going to get your ass kicked. To a certain extent, Steve Austin took that place for a while. You heard the glass breaking. You're like, no, somebody's getting their ass kicked. They need that guy. That's the guy they need. Now look around the WWE and tell me who is that guy. Is it Kevin Owens? No. Is it Sami Zayn? No. Is it Cody Rhodes? Hell no. Who's the guy that you can say, no matter how much you're pushing a heel or a heel faction or whoever, that the top guys are going to be like, shit, not that guy. It's Lesnar. Not almost. It's Lesnar. Nobody's interested in an almost Cody Rhodes match or an almost Roman Reigns match because it's not going to be a very good match. Now, you could argue neither is Brock Lesnar, but at least Lesnar has some background. He can pull out a decent match. I mean, go back to the AJ Styles match. He can pull out a decent match if it needs to be. Almost cannot right now. To be honest with you, Almost should have never been pushed as a wrestler just yet. He should have been pushed as exactly what he was, a bodyguard who once in a blue moon gets in the ring to wrestle and crushes whoever he's up against. But not a wrestler. The minute you made him MVP's top guy, what happened? You saw less of Almost. You saw less of MVP. It sort of faded into the background. You painted yourself into a corner where you had to have Bobby Lashley beat him. And as soon as Bobby Lashley beat him, the mystique is over. And Almost can't reinvent himself at this point. So you got a problem. So what are you going to do with Almost? Well, my theory is if you are going to reunite the Hurt Business, you make Almost basically a guy who doesn't wrestle. Once in a blue moon. Aside from that, he stands outside the ring. He interferes. He beats up people on the outside. And that's about all he does. That's about it. Because at the end of the day, he doesn't have any opponents. I'm looking through the WWE roster and I'm saying, who the hell, if Almost beats Brock Lesnar, who's next on the agenda for him? There isn't anybody. There just isn't. So I think Almost probably is going to get relegated to being MVP's head of security type thing. I do think we probably will see a resurgence of the Hurt Business. And there will be less of a role, at least in the ring, for Almost. And that's the reason I think he's probably going to get beat by Brock Lesnar, although I could potentially see a scenario like Tom is talking about where everybody jumps in and gangs up on Lesnar or whatever. If that is the case, that's a very poor ending to a WrestleMania match. So let's hope that does not happen. I think in time, Almost can become something, but look at Andre the Giant. Did Andre the Giant wrestle every week? Did he go for titles all the time? Was he on television each and every week? No. He was a special attraction once in a while, just like Brock Lesnar. You could do that with Almost. But if you start giving him storylines and opponents and trying to push him for every pay-per-view, it's going to be Almost versus somebody, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. So, Todd, I'm thinking that after this, we'll probably see Almost as a sidekick sort of thing. And I do think we'll see Brock Lesnar re-sign with the WWE.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said about Almost. And for after WrestleMania, I think you're going to probably see Almost be like a bodyguard, more a bodyguard type than an actual in-ring competitor. He could do some things with him as well. He could be like also a special attraction. as well.
I think that's the only way you're going to lengthen his career. I think if he gets in the ring and you literally say, well, we're going to have him on every pay-per-view next year, it's going to be a short career. It's going to be a very short career. He doesn't seem to have the charisma. Nobody's really booing him, and nobody's really cheering him. They're just like, yeah, almost. He can't have that. He needs to be that guy. Now, you could say, well, maybe you could put him against, you know, Braun Strowman or something, but again, anybody really clamoring for that match? Where do you go with a guy like Omos? No place. That's why they didn't do it with Andre. Till very late in his career when they did the Hulk Hogan thing, Andre really wasn't involved in these type of things. He was just a special attraction once in a while. Whereas with Brock Lesnar being that special attraction, you know, just imagine yourself. Take whatever heel group happens to be around. You've formed a new heel group, and they've run roughshod over people, and they beat up all your favorites, and they're in the ring saying there's nobody around here that, you know, everybody fears us, there's nobody come face-to-face with us, and you hear Brock Lesnar's music, and everybody goes nuts. And they get their asses bounced outside the ring and upside down and backwards, and people are into it because, oh, wow, there's the guy that shut them up. That's the guy they need. They need one of those type of guys. Every federation needs one of those type of guys. And I just think Brock Lesnar's that guy. And I think he's going to make huge, huge money being that guy. So let's talk a little bit about the women's division. Let's go over and talk about Charlotte Flair. We all know that Charlotte is trying to basically, I guess, surpass her dad's record with the female, with the women's title. And I think that Charlotte probably is trying very hard to get her husband involved in her storylines past WrestleMania when he can become available. I don't think Charlotte, and we're not doing our predictions, but I don't see Charlotte as being a champion after WrestleMania. Not for a little while. I think you'll probably see Charlotte do the lose the belt, win the belt, lose the belt, win the belt routine a few times. Because in order to break that record, she's going to have to lose that belt. And I think she realizes maybe Rhea Ripley is the person who would be the best suited, and by the time they get around to SummerSlam, I think you might see a different... See, I think a storyline is developing. And I think that storyline that's developing might involve Andrade and Dominic Mysterio. So I think probably you're going to see Charlotte without the title at least until SummerSlam. And I think she's going to be one of those people, too, that she's not on television every single week. But she's going to be there when she's needed, maybe once a month, twice a month, whatever it happens to be. She'll be involved in some other – she'll be involved in a rematch and some other minor things going on. But I think, unless I miss my guess, that what she's trying to pitch, or that maybe the WWE writers are trying to pitch, is Andrade and Charlotte versus Rhea and Dominic. And the reason I say that is she brought up her husband in the interview with Rhea Ripley and Dominic, saying she had her own Latino lover at home or whatever. Very unusual they let her bring that up. Everybody knew what she meant. And I think that after this WrestleMania, and again, we're getting into other people now, I'm not sure how long we're going to see Rhea Ripley and Dominic with the Judgment Day. I think they're probably going to be out on their own, basically, pretty soon. So, Mike, what's your thoughts on that, Charlotte Flair's future here post-WrestleMania?
Right. I think you're right. I've been saying it all about she's going to have to lose the title at least another. She's already up to about 14, right? They wanted to get to 16 or 17, right? So she's got to lose the title another couple of times to get there. And I think, and as far as what you're talking about with Andrade, I'm looking at it right here, and He only has a short amount of time left on his contract, under a year, I think it is. Maybe not even that,
yeah.
You know. So it's entirely possible that by SummerSlam, if not after, but by SummerSlam, we're going to see Andrade back in the WWE. You know, and if that's your power couple there, you know, that could be the power couple. And you're right, why would they allow her to say what she said in that promo if they didn't know that they were going to get Andrade back?
Right, I agree with that. And you know, some people wrote me and said, did Charlotte turn heel on SmackDown? She kind of yelled at the fans and said, don't want me. And, you know, it almost sounds like she's back to being heel. No, I don't think Charlotte turned heel. Here's what you got to understand. If Charlotte was coming out there and really going to say something important and the fans were disrespecting her, her character is the type that would say, hey, shut up. This is important. She wouldn't ignore it and say, oh, the silly fans, you're so funny. I love you. No, that's never been her type. So I don't think Charlotte Flair turned heel at all. I think Charlotte Flair was just expressing that she's that tweener type character. And yeah, like you said, I don't see the WWE allowing her to go out there and even insinuate something about Andrade unless they felt pretty strongly, Tom, that they'd probably be getting him back when his contract was up.
Yeah, for sure. And if she did it without permission, you know, we know what I mean. She's obviously, you know, a made woman in WWE due to who her father is. But if she did it without permission, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be pushing her as hard. I think that they did that for, you know, an impact and what fans really want, I think. I mean, personally, I wouldn't mind Andretti and Charlotte being like the power couple, almost like the Stephanie and Triple H of this era kind of deal going on. And I think that's a good thing. So as far as Charlotte losing the belt, that's probably what's going to happen, and you'll probably most likely see Rhea Ripley and Dominic break away from the Judgment Day, thank God. But
yeah, what I'm thinking here is this. If you're going to do this, you got to find out how long Andrade still has on his contract. Now, Derek is saying, will she go to AEW? No, because her husband's woefully unhappy there. So, obviously, if her husband is saying, this is a good place to stay the hell away from, I don't want to be here, she's not going to show up and say, well, I'm here now. So, they can mistreat you all they want, but they'll probably not treat me that way, so I'll be fine with it. That's not going to happen. He's already expressed his discontent with the Federation and his desire to get out of it, and I don't think she'll go into that environment. However, what I think we will see is probably when his contract is over, we're probably going to see a scenario by which Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair have a rematch in which Charlotte Flair is clearly going to win and Dominic is going to do something. He's going to push her off a rope. He's going to actually physically hit her or trip her or cause her to lose. And she's going to say, okay, this is ridiculous. And you're going to see her husband come out and say, I will take care of Dominic. That's not going to happen anymore. That's what I see happening. If he does decide to sign, I believe he will because he wants to wrestle. He obviously wants to be with his wife. Who wouldn't? WWE understands that. And they want to keep Charlotte Flair happy because she's Charlotte Flair. They want to have her be that multi-time champion that no one's ever going to beat. In order to do that, they got to keep her, and they got to keep her happy. And part of her being happy is bring your husband over here. And who else would he fight? I mean, that would make perfect sense. So I do think that's probably what's going to end up happening. Charlotte Flair's future probably won't be as champion right away. But I think she'll play a very central role in the women's division. And I think eventually we're going to see, we're going to see a sort of a power couple emerge with Charlotte and Andrade, which is what they wanted to begin with. Todd, what's your feelings about Charlotte post-WrestleMania?
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Charlotte Flair. By the looks of it, she's going to end up probably, we've been saying she might drop the title and probably regain it back later down the road. And the part with Andrade, I like to see him back in the WWE. When he was in it the first time, he was a pretty damn good wrestler, not just on the main roster, also when he was in NXT.
To this day, Andrade and Johnny Gargano put on the best match I've seen in my lifetime so far, and that was in NXT. A match that literally made me jump off my sofa like 3 times, and that hasn't happened in a long time. Literally stand on my feet saying, oh, I can't believe that. They were tremendous. And I think that they thought originally that Andrade could be that guy. They are so desperate to get a Latino hero. They understand it can't be Rey because he's too old. Then they thought, well, maybe it would be Santos Escobar, but it's not working. He's not as charismatic as they thought. They tried with Alberto Del Rio. It didn't work. They tried with Angel Garza, and I still say that would have worked, but they gave up on it. Originally, when Andrade came in, that's what they wanted. They were working toward that. And then Andrade became harder to work with or whatever happened, and they just said, forget it. So they could go back to that. They could go back to that theory, we can make Andrade this guy. And with Charlotte with him, so she could kind of help talk for him and with him, that would help. That would definitely help. They tried it with Zelina Vega, but, you know, she was a heel, and it wasn't working out, and we get it. We get it. All right, let's talk about Sami Zayn. I know everybody will be very interested. Sami Zayn has proven one thing to the WWE, and that is if you give him something good, he can run with it. His character, if not his real person, his character is very likable. His character's technically always been likable, even when he was a heel, because he was a Daffy Duck type heel, meaning he was always out for himself and greedy and trying to undercut people, but in a weird, lovable, comical way that never really worked out, just like Daffy Duck. And now that they've shifted him, I do think they realize they've got something pretty good here. So for a lot of people who were saying, do you think it's remotely possible that Sami Zayn ends up super kicking Kevin Owens, recommits himself to the Brotherhood, Bloodline, recommits himself to the Bloodline, and that was the big test that Roman Reigns was really talking about. Can Sami Zayn pull Kevin Owens back in? Maybe the test for that he was talking about wasn't hitting Kevin Owens with a chair. Maybe the test was, can you fool Kevin Owens into once again embracing you and taking you in as your friend so we can get rid of him once and for all? That's not going to happen. I would sooner say Kevin Owens turns on Sami Zayn than I would say Sami Zayn turns on Kevin Owens at this moment. Although anything's possible, and it's good that you have those branches on the tree. My problem with the Sami Zayn thing is people are saying, you don't think that's a good storyline that Roman can then say, hey, the test I was talking about had nothing to do with him beating up Kevin Owens at that moment. The test was, can you break away from the Bloodline, convince Kevin Owens you're his buddy and his brother, and set him up for the kill? It's a good storyline, but here's the problem with that storyline. Fans are still going to cheer Sami Zayn. And they're going to be happy Sami Zayn's back with the Bloodline. So they're not going to boo Sami Zayn, and they're not going to cheer Kevin Owens, so you've done it for nothing. If you did the reverse, they would boo Kevin Owens out of the building. Kevin Owens would be the top heel in the entire company if he turns on Sami Zayn. But I don't think either one is going to happen. I honestly think that they're going to be the tag team champions after WrestleMania, and I think they're going to hold them for a good long time. I think they're going to probably start more tension with the Bloodline. I think maybe even we're going to see, and we'll get to that in a minute, some people leave the Bloodline. But I don't think they're going to turn on each other, because that's going to be such temporary money. Okay, Kevin Owens is the heel, and you get set him up against Sami Zayn, and whatever happens, Sami Zayn wins, and then what's next for Kevin Owens? Nothing. I think rather than to do that, they'll have them be the tag team champions, because they're going to build up this, you know, we're brothers for a very long time before something else happens. So my prediction for Sami Zayn post-WrestleMania is he becomes a tag team champion and probably keeps him at least till SummerSlam, if not maybe longer than that, Mike.
Right. And I think about this. Think about it this way, okay? I'm going to go, for the younger fans of the show, I'm going to go back into history. There was this gimmick that the UWF at the time was running with Chris Adams and Terry Taylor as tag team partners, and they were promoting them as brothers and friends and all that stuff, and so close that you couldn't tell they weren't brothers, you know. And the payoff became when Terry Taylor turned heel on Chris Adams, all right, which kicked off a feud that went from the UWF to other federations around carried it on. So I mean, yeah, they're not gonna do that right away. Let's say they win. You know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn win the championships. They're copacetic for the first, I don't know, 6 to 8 months or whatever, you know, and then we start to see cracks. Right?
Yeah.
You start to see cracks in the veneer of their friendship. And then at some point a year and a half down the line, then that's when you get the turn by either Kevin or probably by Kevin, but because by that time this whole we'll get to that, the storyline with the Bloodline will be over with, and by that time, it'll be time for Sami to possibly rejoin the Bloodline, possibly. And the Bloodline will be...
You know, a fan had pointed out to me, and it is worth talking about. A fan had pointed out to me when he said, do you think it's possible Kevin Owens turns on Sami Zayn at WrestleMania? And I initially scoffed at it. He said, well, think about the following. Right after they got back together as friends, the very first thing he did was embarrass Sami Zayn and say, oh, you wanted to come out to your own music because you wanted your pop. And Sami Zayn looked confused about it and said, why are we talking about this? You know, let's just talk about other things. I didn't want to come out because I wanted my own pop. Then he said, oh, well, the fans obviously love you. And the fans roared, and then he said, yeah, well, they love you too. And then they started chanting KO, and he said, oh, they're only chanting KO because you kind of encouraged them to do it. That did happen. Both of those things did happen. So is that an accident? I don't know. Maybe that's part of the long-term seed being planted for a turn 8 months down the road. I don't know. But the truth is, yeah, both those things did happen, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's funny because I didn't even look at it that way. And that's a very good point. Although I don't think the WWE will pull the trigger on it because the fans are clamoring to see KO and Sammy with the tag team championships and hold
right.
it for a while and kind of break up the bloodline. It would be cool if they did go that way because nobody would really see that coming. I mean, honestly, I didn't see it. But that's a very good point, very interesting that, you know, you would go in depth like that. And that's very cool. Very cool storyline. I wouldn't have a problem
with
it.
Well, I'll tell you this. If at WrestleMania the following things happen, Roman Reigns retains his belt, which I think is unlikely since he wants time off, and the Usos retain their belts because Kevin Owens turns on Sami Zayn and joins the bloodline, I will stand up and applaud because, wow, did you ever sucker people in with this? If that happens and Roman Reigns says, I told you we had a KO problem, and I told you if no one else can solve it, I will. Well, I solved it. I got him on our side. Problem is, we had the wrong Us all along. We picked Sami Zayn. We should have picked Kevin Owens. Then that would have been something. That would be something. That would be huge. That would be huge. Will the WWE do that? I doubt it. There is little hints, though. The guy rightfully pointed out those little hints that Kevin Owens seems a little jealous and thinks that Sami Zayn's hot-dogging it. So, Mike, that's an interesting point. I just don't think the WWE will pull it, though.
Well, I mean, they could pull it because that would fit into what I've been saying all along about a dusty finish with a Cody.
Right.
You know, think about it. I mean, there is a reason why they call it a dusty finish. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's his dad. They want him to have the title, but it would be a really great tribute to his dad. His dad made that thing such a big thing at one point, and if Vince is sticking his nose deep into the booking like the rumors say that he is, then the dusty finish might not be out of the question.
Well, I'll tell you, you could have a really weird sort of a double dusty finish where if at night one, Kevin Owens turns on Sami Zayn and joins the bloodline. If night two, Jey Uso super kicks Roman Reigns and says, I'm out because if you had this all planned on Sami, you were making a fool out of me too. I attacked Sami Zayn. I did all these things because I thought, you know, he had turned his back on us. You had already turned your back on him. You set the whole damn thing up. And Sami was the only person who was really being honest this whole time. Wow. Well, then you got a weird thing where you might literally be able to do Kevin Owens and Jimmy Uso against Jey Uso and Sami Zayn. There's a lot of convoluted stuff you could do. But you see, that's why this storyline is so strong. Because we could sit here and come up with 30 things, not one. Now you go fast forward to Omos and Brock Lesnar. Where's the storyline? Brock Lesnar loses, almost does what? Nothing. Brock Lesnar wins. Does it help Brock Lesnar? No. There's no storyline. There's no, and then this. It's just a match. Where we can sit here and do bloodline stuff till the day is done. And we're still not sure exactly what's going to happen. So that's good. If I had to bet, I would bet Sami Zayn ends up a tag team champion after WrestleMania. And we may see the slow burn of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn slowly take place. And you're right, it'll be Kevin Owens who turns, if that's the case, eventually. Let's move on. Let's talk about Bray Wyatt, because I know a lot of people think he's not even going to be around after WrestleMania. I'm hearing, and I'm still hearing, that Bray Wyatt had nothing to do with the creative. It had nothing to do with not wanting to do certain things. It had to do with an illness or an injury. And that he's not going to be at WrestleMania, or if he is, it's only going to be maybe on the Titantron or something like that. He's not actually going to wrestle. They're not going to let him go, folks. They've signed him to a contract. They're going to do something with him. Not like they're just going to say goodbye. They'd have to pay him the money. But they have a problem with Bray Wyatt, too, and I'm going to tell you what it is. It's the same problem as with Omos. Who's his opponent? Bray Wyatt has always had that problem. Guy like Brock Lesnar says, I don't even want to work with him, because when you work with a guy like Bray Wyatt, you have to buy into the stuff, and it makes your character look weird that you're buying into that stuff. Now, I could argue everybody worked with The Undertaker, and they did that, and they had to buy into all that stuff, and it looked weird, but they still did it. But Bray Wyatt takes it to a new level. The idea behind The Undertaker was he does appear to be impervious to pain. He does appear to be able to pop up when Paul Bearer holds that urn. He's extremely big, extremely strong. He's a little bit scary, and all that combined is a problem. Whereas Bray Wyatt's more of, he's not that big. He's not necessarily even that scary. He's just weird. And you got to sort of play like the psychological thing is getting in your head. Unless he does The Fiend. Then if he does The Fiend, then you got to buy into that. And you got to buy into that it's a somewhat supernatural type thing. And it's impervious to a lot of pain. And, you know, it's like a Jason Voorhees type thing. But a lot of wrestlers don't want to do that. Now I'm going to tell you something that might surprise you. While there are a lot of wrestlers who don't want to do that, there are some wrestlers who are jealous. And the reason they're jealous is because they know that's a really cool character. And they know that that character is going to be one of those characters that don't lose much and gets a lot of TV time and gets a lot of mic time. And they would like to have that, and they're not going to have that, and they don't want to put them over. But either way, Bray Wyatt's got a problem when it comes to opponents. I think Bray Wyatt, much like Omos, has to be somebody who's not on TV every week. Or if he is, it's only to do the Funhouse segments or something, whatever, and then, you know, just make sure people know he's around. But I don't think he should be someone who is constantly in a feud, constantly on TV, opening up Raw, closing Raw, whatever, or SmackDown, whatever it happens to be. No, I don't think so. You got to use Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt's like the icing on the cake, but you don't eat icing, just icing. You got to have the cake. So I would use him sparingly. I would use him in, you know, pay-per-views, not every pay-per-view, but most of the major pay-per-views, once in a while on TV. But I wouldn't give him a weekly status because I think that's a mistake. It gets old. That's the problem. It gets a little old. You know, nobody was crying that big of tears when he left. They were like, ah, well, the Fiend thing wasn't working out that well anyway, and blah, blah, blah. Then when he came back, everybody's like, oh, they lost their mind. They're all running to their computers to download the code and all kinds of things. Can't wait for him to come back. Because they missed it. But then after a steady diet of it for a month and a half, 2 months, it was like, oh, he's getting old again. That's Bray Wyatt's problem. His gimmick gets kind of worn quick, and you've got to have less of it instead of more. You know, you may love ice cream. You don't want one a day. So I'm seeing for Bray Wyatt, I think they're just going to do more of the same with Bray Wyatt. I think they're going to use him somewhat sparingly. I think they're going to have him be hit and miss with certain feuds as far as who he wrestles. I don't think you're going to see him going for, you know, major championships. You're not going to see him against people like Roman Reigns or Gunther or, you're not going to see that because they don't want to do it. So he's always going to be that guy kind of lurking in the background, but I don't think he's going to be a major, major player, Mike.
Absolutely. And think about this. Go back and remember Roddy Piper when he was really going strong. And he was not only just in the ring, but he was doing his Piper's Pit segment. That those segments, you didn't see that segment every week. You didn't see the Piper spit every week. He wasn't in the ring every week, you know, very sparingly. Yeah, he got in the ring just to prove that he could do it, but, you know, it was very sparingly in the ring, and it made any time he got in the ring or any time he did a Piper's Pit, it made that a special thing. That's how, and he's kind of like Bray Wyatt to the fact of Piper was very cerebral, was very, you know, gets in your head with his rhetoric and stuff. And that's the way you should be playing. I mean, you could turn that thing, you could turn that Funhouse segment into an interview segment to promote other matches, you know. I mean, they probably should have done that with the Miz TV, but again, they don't do Miz TV, but every so often, right? That's another thing.
Right.
They don't do it every so often. And that's what makes Miz TV special, is because they don't do it but every so often, you know?
I've always said the proper way to handle Bray Wyatt is to have him be two different characters, to be Bray Wyatt, who wrestles, sometimes wins, sometimes loses, 50-50 type guy, gets involved in some feuds. But if something gets real bitter, if a feud goes way bad, or something really bad happens, he becomes the Fiend. And the Fiend is basically, you're not beating him. So that's it. Much like they do sometimes with Finn Balor and the Demon. Although the Demon's been beat. And, of course, the Fiend eventually would get beat. But a steady diet of this Bray Wyatt is probably not the best thing, Tom, because after a while it does get old.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely 100% correct on that. And a limited capacity with Bray Wyatt is definitely what they need to go through and go to, because if you bring him back every single week, where what do you do with it? And you can see how they're having an issue, obviously, because they really don't know what to do with it when you use him every single week. Bringing him back in specific areas like the South, you know, because that's where he's really popular. Show him on TV every once in a while when they make their run through the Southern states. Maybe a major pay-per-view that's held in, you know, Atlanta or, you know, Florida or, you know, Alabama, whatever. You could do that with Bray Wyatt and just have him disappear after that for a little bit. Bring him back in certain segments or a limited capacity, that character will have a lot more impact as an attraction than having him be on TV every single week. Because this Uncle Howdy thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he's someone you can continue with every single week and be successful. I do, however, Todd, think post WrestleMania we're going to see a Wyatt stable. I think we're going to see more than just Uncle Howdy.
Oh, you are absolutely right there. Like you said, like you said about Bray Wyatt and everything, that the only thing was working for him was the cult leader Bray Wyatt and the Fiend Bray Wyatt. That was the only two things was mostly working for him.
Yeah, I think you'll see a return of the Fiend at some point. But I do think you're going to see a clique of some kind. I think you're going to see a Wyatt group consisting of Uncle Howdy, probably Alexa Bliss will be in there, and probably one or two other people. And I think that's going to start to form pretty much right after WrestleMania. They're going to have to do something with him quick. He's signed to a multi-year deal. They're not. So for the people who are saying they're just going to let him go, they're not going to let him. They're not going to let him go. So they have to do something. So that's what I would assume they're going to do. So let's talk about, I guess we'll talk about Roman Reigns. Watch for Roman Reigns after WrestleMania. Well, we know he's taking some time off. Some people have said an extended period of time. Some people have said you won't see him again until SummerSlam. So this is a little bit of a tip-off. If you will not see Roman Reigns on your television until just before SummerSlam to set up a SummerSlam match, then I got to wait that long for a rematch with Cody Rhodes. Because by that time, Cody Rhodes is going to have went through two or three people. They're not going to wait that long. So it's going to have to be something that takes Roman out, that you would say Roman has totally lost face. He has totally lost whatever. It's not just the title. And my assumption would be that that would be Jey Uso turning on him. My assumption would be that you would see Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. That would be a reason for Roman Reigns to come back and say, you know, you're the one who destroyed the family, and Jey could be the one saying, I'm the one who upheld the family. You were the one who destroyed the family by thinking you were the head of everything. So there's a built-in story there. I think you won't see Roman that much. Now, is that going to hurt the WWE? You bet. Because I don't care what anybody says, and once again, for the benefit of people who don't listen every week, I've told everyone many times over, Cody Rhodes is a good guy. I have met him on a couple of occasions and talked to him on a couple of occasions. I believe he truly and honestly loves the business. I believe he truly and honestly respects the fans. And I believe he truly and honestly listens to what the fan says and tries to appease them. But having said all of that, he's not the guy. I don't care if he's selling merchandise right now. I'm telling you that post-WrestleMania, Cody Rhodes is not the guy that's going to carry your ratings. There's no storyline you can do with Cody Rhodes that's going to be anywhere close to as compelling as the Bloodline angle. And he, for the fact that he's pretty good on the microphone, he's still sort of a one-trick pony where he has to over-dramatize and sometimes I just say to myself, I don't know how this is working. This is working only because the fans hate Roman so much, not because they love Cody so much. And when Roman's gone, then what? So I don't think Cody's the guy to carry this federation for long. Now, they may have promised him the title, and he may very well win it. But I don't think he's the guy. I don't think he's the guy that's going to hold it 900 days. You know what I mean? He's not that guy. And for the people who say, well, you know, Gunther, they're freeing him up. He'll be that guy. Gunther's not that guy either. He's not that guy. Gunther and a microphone is a dangerous thing. He is not adequate on the microphone. He is terrible on the microphone. If he's not flat out making mistakes and stuttering over his words, he's saying stuff that really doesn't make any sense. He is not good on the microphone. So you're not going to send him out to do talk shows and be the face of the country. That's just not going to happen. Not going to happen. Cody be better off than that, well, quite a bit better off. So that's not going to happen. But he doesn't have the charisma. He just doesn't. So I'm not 100% sure where they're going to go with that. But I think that after WrestleMania, we'll probably see limited amounts of Roman Reigns for a while, Mike. And when he comes back, it's probably going to be to take on Jey Uso. And then shortly after that, I'm guessing we'll probably see the whole Bloodline turn face.
Right, and that's the thing. And think about this. He did say he wanted to do a movie. What if he's already got one lined up to be done? Now, we haven't heard that, but what if, and let's say WrestleMania takes place, what, next weekend, in the next couple of weekends? 6 months from WrestleMania is what, SummerSlam, right? Usually takes about 6 months, 3 to 4 months to do a movie, to film the movie, you know, and by that time it's SummerSlam time, so that would put him right back to coming back for SummerSlam, right?
Yeah. I believe he'll be back for SummerSlam. I just don't know exactly in what capacity. Listen, he deserves it, Tom. He deserves the time off. The WWE can, and should be sweating over this, saying, uh-oh, I wonder if we're going to lose ratings, we're going to lose whatever. They should be sweating a little bit, but they can't deny him the time. I mean, he's been champion for how long now, and he's basically carried the top storyline in the company for 2.5 years.
Yeah, 100%. And to be honest with you, Roman is – it's not just a T-shirt. Roman's the needle mover. Because without Roman on that show, there's definitely something missing. So yeah, if I was WWE, I'd be sweating a little bit. But you have the supporting cast of the Bloodline that could do just as good of a job. And here's their time to shine in Roman's absence. And I have confidence because they're so good at what they do. I have confidence that they can, you know, hold the fort down to a certain extent in Roman's absence. And Roman definitely does deserve the time off because he's been carrying that that storyline for and been champion for 3 years. It's not just a fancy T-shirt or a slogan or a catchphrase. It's true.
No, it definitely is. So you think we will see a much reduced Roman Reigns after WrestleMania, Todd?
Like you said, we're probably going to see like Roman Reigns until after WrestleMania. We'll probably see him like return at SummerSlam.
See, I think that's going to be his in-ring return. You might see him here or there, but I don't think he's going to do much in the ring. I really don't. All right, let's move on to Bayley, because I have concerns about Bayley. And what I'm about to say is probably going to be hugely controversial. What else is new? But Bayley's not looking good. She looks tired. She looks like her heart's not in it. She looks like she's reading the lines off the back of her hand. And she's really dropping a lot of momentum. There was a time when Bayley was one of the top four. You know, you had basically Charlotte and Becky and Bayley and Sasha, right? Those were it. Those are the four biggies. I don't think she's close to that now. You have Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley, Asuka, and then, you know, it goes down the line to maybe Bayley. But even that is a weak fifth. And I could argue maybe even sixth with some people coming up. So we got to get a total change from Bayley. I think the WWE understands that too. The WWE understands that this damage control thing did not work. The only person that had any charisma in damage control was Bayley, and she's lost it. Doesn't seem interested in doing it. And we got to get her back to a popularity or at least back to an area where she gets a tremendous heat. I don't see the heat coming. I don't think there's anything Bayley can do, get a ton of heat on her. Her character is more annoying than it is fearful or people wanting to see her get beat up. It's just like, oh, God, she's acting like in a mean girl clique. And I think that's got to end. I think Bayley needs to go back to probably doing the face thing. The problem with Bayley doing the face thing at this point is she just looks worn out. I don't know what happened. I know Bayley had some troubles and she lost some people in her life and she's had some other issues, but I'm looking at Bayley now and I'm saying, I don't see the fire. I don't see the desire. I don't see the momentum. I don't even see her having much fun. And that's a problem. I have a feeling, and I hope I'm wrong, that Bayley's going to get cycled down tremendously after WrestleMania. I think we're going to see less of Bayley, and when we do, she's going to be counting the ring lights, and she's going to be used to promote other people coming up. And I think Bayley's big run as being one of the top two or three women in WWE has probably come to an end, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say too that too. We'll see. I still think they missed the deal with her and becoming the female John Cena, but mm-hmm. We'll see. And it's like I'm trying to find out how long her contract is. They're not gonna let her go. But even if it is a short term contract, they're not gonna let her go, because maybe they would, because maybe she's just gotten stale in the WWE. I don't know. I mean, we basically said they made a mistake when she first came up. They made a mistake by doing what they did to her. They could have had the female John Cena, and they screwed the pooch on that, and it's all their fault,
And they still could have, if they came to me and said, we're going to turn her heel, I would have said, we're turning her heel so we can return her face, correct? That's why we're turning her heel. We're turning her heel to make her even more popular when she goes face, correct? Because if your answer is no, we're turning her heel to make her a top heel for a long period of time, I would have said you're making a huge mistake. And people will ask me, what's the difference? Well, here's the difference. If she's a long-term heel, she's not going to go up, which is exactly what's happening now. If she's a short-term heel, where you can then have her be recalcitrant and say, I can't believe I sacrificed my morals, I sacrificed everything I swore I would never, ever do if I got to be a professional wrestler. I did. Every single thing that I hated people for doing, and I said, I'll never do that, betray the fans, betray my partners, betray the Federation, I did. And I did it because I was on such a losing streak, and I panicked, and I thought I had to do something to shake up my career, and all I really did was destroy my career. And I destroyed my credibility, and I destroyed the really close relationship I had with the fans that I'll never, ever get back. Then if you wanted to have her do some kind of retirement angle where she says, I'm leaving in disgrace because I disgraced myself, and you have people talk shit about her for weeks on end and run her name through the mud, and she finally shows back up at that other Bayley, she's going to get the roof blown off the building, and people are going to get behind her and say she made a mistake, but she understands what she did, and she's back to the old Bayley, and she's back to being on the top of the game. That's the only way I would have agreed to the heel turn. But this ding-dong thing and the stupid, I'm telling you, this is not working at all. Hasn't worked. And I like Io Shirai, Io Sky, whatever you want to call her, and Dakota Kai. They're fine in the ring. They have no charisma. They have no charisma. And so that team is dead in the water. And Bayley looks tired, in my opinion, Tom, of holding that team down.
Oh, for sure. And, you could just see it in her body language that she's just, that she's just kind of going through the motions, and it's kind of sad because at one point Bayley was one of the top in the in the company as far as the women competitors, and right now is Io Sky and Dakota Kai are good ring wise, but they can't hold it together without Bayley, and Bayley when you don't have the three working as a cohesive unit, because behind the scenes, your heart's not into it. It's going to make for some really bad on-screen you know, on-screen angles where it's just going to be, it's just going to get to the point where it gets boring and it doesn't have impact to the fans. And the fans are not going to, the fans are not going to be into it, and that's going to result in less and less TV time for, sadly, all three of them.
Yeah, most like. Let's go with Bronson Reed because, man, he came in here like gangbusters and they have, were pushing him as a guy who just was basically unbeatable. Then they took him into the Elimination Chamber and it took all, basically everybody to beat him. And it sure as hell looked as if he was heading for a feud with Otis. And then Otis took a really weird turn toward this Maximum Male Models to the extent that, and they're heels. So to an extent that Otis is now a face in a heel group. He's a face being led astray by heels. That's not who you want Bronson Reed to fight. So I don't think that's on the table anymore. Could Bronson Reed start a feud with a, you know, another powerhouse? Of course he could. But Bronson Reed has one weakness that I can see, and that is he doesn't seem to be able to get over with the crowd. He does great moves. He does the top rope thing, and he's very agile for a guy his size. And every time he comes out, there's crickets. And I say to myself, I'm not sure why, other than they're just not buying into him. Bronson Reed is a guy who screams, I need a manager, badly need a manager. And you don't have any. You're not going to give him Paul Heyman. And you don't have anybody else. Bronson Reed absolutely 100% needs a manager. If you could go back in history and pluck Bobby Heenan to be Bronson Reed's manager, boy, would you have a major force. Even Jimmy Hart. Somebody who could just help that along. But the WWE doesn't really believe in that so much anymore. And when Bronson Reed is just left on his own like this, he's not being taken as seriously as he should. I think you're going to see him continue to be pushed, but if they were going to push him big, they would have gave him a match at WrestleMania. He does not have one. He's going to be probably in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Perhaps he'll win it. But they would have given him something more than that. If they saw something in him that was special, they would say, this is our chance to highlight him at WrestleMania. And they didn't. So I think the jury's still out on Bronson Reed, Mike. I think it could go either way. I do think they'll try to push him somewhat, but I think it's going to be limited based on reaction.
Right. And think about this. You know, even he could even be helped out if he had somebody like Enzo, you know, a hype man, basically, Leo Rush type guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know. Yep. I mean, that's what made Enzo big cash. W. Morrissey big cash. Whatever you want to call him. So Will, because Morrissey worked well off of Enzo. Enzo was a hype man, and you know Morrissey was the muscle. You know, same thing for Leo Rush. Leo Rush was the hype man. Bobby Lashley was the muscle. Right?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. So let me pitch this quick idea. What would we think of this? How about if we had Otis join the Maximum Male Models? Obviously, Chad Gable's trying to tell him you're being used. You need to come back with me. They're telling Otis you did nothing with him. You know, don't worry about him. He's not really your friend. He was just using you. And Chad Gable goes and gets Bronson Reed as the replacement for Otis. And Bronson Reed becomes Chad Gable's new sort of cohort for a little while. Maybe even goes against Otis. But if you don't want him to go against Otis right away, have him work out with Chad Gable for a couple of months until you're ready to do something with Otis. Maybe even go against Maximum Male Models minus Otis. And when Bronson Reed figures out Chad Gable's not helping me. He squashes Chad Gable, beats the hell out of him. Otis comes to his friend's rescue, leaves Maximum Male Models, gets back with Chad Gable and says, you know, I'll get the revenge on Bronson Reed, and you have Otis Bronson Reed. That's probably the best way to handle that. It would give you a few months of Bronson Reed. It would give you a few months of Otis and Chad Gable. Problem with that is it looks like they want Chad Gable to be the face. He wouldn't be a face if he's running around with Bronson Reed. So you'd have to make it that Chad Gable really is still a face. He's just pissed that Otis left. And so he's any port in a storm, and he's taking Bronson Reed, even though he knows Bronson Reed's no good. And just like he's telling Otis Maximum Male Models are no good and they're eventually going to turn on you, well, it's Bronson Reed who's no good and eventually turns on Chad Gable. I'd sign off on that story, Todd. Tom?
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking. So that's something that I would definitely be into, because Bronson Reed currently right now is just like a really, really, really inflated balloon. They just, you know, they blew him up so big, and it's just going to be a matter of time until he deflates and, you know, blows all over the place, and nobody's going to care. It's getting to the point right now where nobody really cares, because he doesn't have.
Yeah, I fear, Todd, that when he loses, when Bronson Reed takes that first loss, it's not the Elimination Chamber loss, that a lot of the air is going to go out of that balloon.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Otis and Bronson Reed thing, you could do a lot of things with those two. You could have, like, different matches. You could have a body slam match.
There's a lot of feuds you could run with them. You could run a really good feud based on the Chad Gable thing. And then if you wanted to, down the road, you could have them, you know, come to their senses and form a tag team. God, what a tag team. Can you imagine Bronson Reed and Otis? Jesus Christ. You know, so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you could do. There's branches on the tree to that story, too. It just depends on how much they believe in Bronson Reed, how much they believe in Otis, what they want to do with Chad Gable, because I heard Chad Gable's getting a big push. Probably as a face. So I don't know. I don't know what they want to do with him. Let's go to LA Knight, because I've heard LA Knight has really impressed the WWE. In house shows, which he's been doing a lot of, he's been getting really big reactions. Bigger reactions than some of their major stars. And it's not going unnoticed. And even though they're kind of jabroning him out every time he steps out, they let him get a big win over Rey Mysterio. I know it's with distraction from Dominic and all that, but I got news. That's still a big win. That's a Hall of Famer and a legend. And they could have put anybody in that spot they wanted to put to get that victory. Chose LA Knight. So I'm thinking, Mike, that there's probably bigger things in store for LA Knight post-WrestleMania.
There are probably bigger things. And if what they're saying is true about the other guy that's coming up, what's his name? That was running that thing with him and DiBiase back in NXT. If he's coming up, then he could be looking at that, right? But yeah, you're right. This is a thing. And think about this. The other thing that I'm hearing is that they may be looking to putting together another Shield, you know, with Seth Rollins and a couple of other guys, right? And think about this. He has history with being in a group with another Shield member, does LA Knight. Because back in the HWA days, the Heartland Wrestling Federation, he was in a little group with Moxley and a few other guys, you know, in that little group there. So if they're going to put together a new Shield, they're going to need members, and he could be a member of the new Shield. If they put...
My problem with that is that I don't think he's good unless he's playing that basically Eli Drake character. You know, he can't. He's not doing the dummy thing, but he's still doing the yeah thing. And I think if I don't know if he's ever going to be taken that seriously as like a the Shield. They were all taken real seriously. You had Roman Reigns the power. You had Seth Rollins who was like the architect, and you had Dean Ambrose who was like the crazy one. And all three of them posed a real threat to you. One technical threat, one power threat, and one because they were just crazy. Eli Drake being sort of just a wisecracking, mouth-off Miz type probably won't fit that role. But he's popular. He's a little bit like a Roddy Piper. He's great on the mic. He's good in the ring. He's just, he needs the right storyline. He needs the right feuds. And it'd be very interesting to see how they're going to promote him, especially since he's not the reaction he's getting is not boos. It's not like they're saying, "Oh, he's getting a good reaction." They're booing him out of the building. Nah, he's getting a good reaction. They're popping for him. So there you might have a problem because he's going to be one of these guys that you say, "Well, he's a heel, but everybody likes him." So you might have to modify it somewhat. It'll be very interesting to see where that goes. What's your thoughts on LA Knight going forward past WrestleMania, Tom?
LA Knight going past WrestleMania, I mean, he's definitely good enough in the ring and good enough on the mic what he's doing now with that Eli Drake. He's still kind of annoying. Because he just makes you feel, I liked him better when he was getting up in your face and making you feel like uncomfortable. that was quite entertaining. But after WrestleMania, I hope they give him a good push because he's been proving himself at house shows. I mean, what more can you do? It's like give him a push, see where it goes.
Yeah, you may as well. I mean, as Eli Drake, he was fantastic. And then when he was LA Knight in NXT, he was getting over pretty well. He hasn't quite reached that in WWE yet, Todd, but I think he has the potential to do it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, LA Knight is one of those guys who could get over the fans just like that. He don't need to be a face, don't need to be a heel. He should be a neutral like Piper was. Go after whoever who tried to start with him.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing. Yeah, just kind of be a gray area face where it's, you could do either way. All right, let's do Karrion Kross because this one is unfortunate. Once again, my impressions of Karrion Kross is that he is a guy who tries real hard. Cares very deeply about his performance, cares very deeply about the business, is willing to do just about anything they ask him to do, seems to be an easy-to-work-with type guy, isn't arrogant, isn't I'm better than everybody type thing. He's humble enough to go and say, I'll start from the bottom and, you know, work my way up, but, man, he has not connected with the fans. He just has not connected with the fans. And the only possible way you're ever going to make this work is you have got to flip them. You have got to make it like you were doing with Miro and Lana, and that is that something happens to Scarlett and he defends her and then they become faces and they're a power couple type thing. Fans will probably cheer for him. They're not going to boo him because he's just not doing anything bad enough for you to boo. He's not the guy that he was in NXT. You're not even promoting him as the guy he was in NXT. He's a totally different character. And it's not working. Unfortunately, I don't think you're going to do that. I hate to say it, but I predict they're probably going to part ways with him. I wish they would give him a face turn and a run to try to at least see if the fans will take to him, because I think the answer is yes, they will. I really do. We've said this about Asuka. We've said it about a couple other people. Their personality when they're just being themselves is actually better. I watched him and Scarlett on Sheamus's workout channel on YouTube. Very personable guy, very likable guy. So is she. Just let him be that. Let him be that. And I think the fans will be like, okay, I like them. I was much more taken by them as a couple when they were just being themselves than when they're trying this dark whatever that does it's not working. And you've got enough of that anyway. You got Bray Wyatt here. You know, forget it. You've got enough of this. Let them just be them. And I bet you fans would take to them. However, I don't think the WWE is going to do it. I reluctantly think they might be on their way out. Mike, what do you think?
I think they're probably on their way out as well. And you're right. They need that. I mean, if they could find another guy like Aiden English that basically he helped to turn Miro, Rusev, right? And so,
yeah.
If he could find another guy like that or whatever, I mean, they could do something like that. But again, this is a guy that went down in NXT, and when he was over there in Impact, they were over, right?
Yeah, they were. They were very over. Again, it's the WWE's fault here. You've dropped the ball with him a couple of times. And you're not really you're not fully behind him. You're not fully supporting him. That's obvious in the way you booked him. He doesn't even have a match at WrestleMania. He's probably going to be a part of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, Tom. And that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal has turned into, initially, the first year or so, it was kind of special. And you had some pretty good names, big names in there. It has now turned into who's left we can't use at WrestleMania because we don't know what to do with them, and we'll just throw them in there. And that's a shame.
Yeah, that's really super sad, to be honest with you, because
we lost you. Somehow we lost Tom right in mid-sentence, so we'll get back to him. Yeah, they would give him something to do, Todd, if it wasn't if they were going to push him in any way. So my assumption is the push of Karrion Kross is about over.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Karrion Kross and everything, when we first saw him in Impact Wrestling, he was totally different. He was more medicine, more scary looking, playing like a psychotic creep killer. And that's when Karrion Kross was that good. And now he looks
He was good at that. And then, you know, he was pretty good at it in NXT. But up here, it's not working. Let me let you finish your thought there, Tom. We got you back.
The Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal used to be, as you were saying, used to be really special, and it had a really good amount of impact where fans were like, okay, this might be cool. This is kind of like nostalgic in a way. Now it's just like leftovers. And Karrion Kross deserves better because he's such a good worker. He's personable. He works hard on his character, clearly. It's just, unfortunately, the fans are not into it. And his character is good. It just doesn't have the impact that the WWE thought it would have. And I think they need to change it 100%.
I think the reason the character's not having that impact is they changed it so dramatically. And in changing it that dramatically, and Karrion Kross, I'll tell you, the one thing that he has, and maybe he's being told to do it, so I can't blame him for this. The one thing he does that I think is a huge mistake is I think he sells too much for a guy his size. In other words, when you see these guys like, even Bronson Reed and, you know, those guys that have some kind of like, I'm supposed to be super powerful or whatever, they almost look inconvenienced when things don't go their way. They hit the turnbuckle, you know, and then they try to run and crush the guy and the guy moves. And they're just like, oh, okay, I missed. Or, okay, the guy flipped me, and it's like, damn it, he flipped me. He didn't hurt me. He just embarrassed me. I got flipped. Karrion Kross oversells. He ends up being like, you know, oh, that hurt me. This hurt me. I'm in big trouble. I'm, you know. And everything, like The Undertaker didn't do that. And a lot of other, Bray Wyatt doesn't do that. There's a lot of people who don't do that. Even Dexter Lumis doesn't do that. And when Karrion Kross, who I think is trying to make people see, I'm willing to work with people and I don't want to make anybody look bad, so I'm going to sell for them. I'm going to sell the hell out of their stuff. In selling the hell out of their stuff, he's almost making himself look weak because I think he needs to sell a little bit less, Mike.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, if they had brought him up as his done this, you know, had him told him to sell more, then I'd say, well, you're making a big mistake because that's not that character, right? That Karrion Kross character was not a guy that was going to sell all that much to people because he was supposed to be, what, supernatural or whatever and all this stuff, you know. Nothing was supposed to be able to hurt him, you know. And this character is – they've totally weakened this character. I mean, I'm sure it's partially him, but they totally changed his character.
Yeah, and look, the Rey Mysterio thing didn't help him. That match, then I would clearly tell Karrion Kross, look, yeah, Rey's going to get in a lot of offense. He's going to flip you. He's going to do this high-flying stuff. I don't ever want to see a look of pain or anything on your face. I just want to see you angry that, he's avoiding me. He's hitting me with these little, it's like a fly buzzing around my head. It's not hurting me, but he's annoying me. And then you go to Rey and say, Rey, no offense to you, but we told Karrion Kross to greatly undersell. He's not disrespecting you. We told him to do that because that's the character we want. But he's going to look annoyed and upset that you're avoiding him and he can't catch you and you're chipping away at him a little bit, but he's not going to oversell. That's fair. You see, you want to save that guy because then when he does sell, when you do put him up against a guy like Drew McIntyre and McIntyre bounces him like for the first time on his ass seriously because they're going to be like, he ain't laughing about that, is he? You know what I mean? And then that guy gets the rub. So, yeah, I think some of it is him just trying to be respectful to everybody. But for a guy his size, I think he oversells. I hope things work out for him because I think he's got a lot to offer, but they got to change up the character. Talk about, I guess we'll talk about Dexter Lumis. I don't know what's going to become of this guy. I do know this. He has the look. But once again, you've blown it. Once again, you said, we're going to make him the straight man to Johnny Gargano's being nerd. Why you don't make this guy a serious stalker / serial killer type guy that's really stalking wrestlers, that's really, you know, behind the scenes beating people up, causing chaos, bug-eyed crazy? I don't know why you don't. He would be a top heel if you did that. But I can clearly see you have nothing for him because he got pinned the other night, clean pinned. And I just said to myself, okay, well, we're done here. The Dexter Lumis experiment is over. This is another guy who he's got limited. He's not great in the ring. He's an average wrestler, but he's got a way above average look and he's got a way above average gimmick if you exploit that gimmick. But you had to exploit that gimmick to the nth degree. You had to exploit that gimmick where there were literally, you know, announcers who were fearful of being backstage because Dexter Lumis is supposedly lurking back there. There's got to be, you know, people who he's stalking, who you can clearly see him in the background when they're interviewing, you know, stuff that makes you freak out. Instead, you made him a cartoon character. He's handing out money to children and things to children, but he's supposed to be this guy who, in a heartbeat, will go get an axe or something. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. And throwing Johnny Gargano into that mix was a huge mistake. I know it worked in NXT, but the reason it worked in NXT is because you gave him that gigantic run as that guy first. He wasn't that lovable, lunatic guy at first. He was exactly what I said. And then when it got old, after a year and a half or 2 years, you modified the character. But a lot of fans didn't see that in NXT. All they see is this character. There's not the way you start. You want to finish it that way later, fine. You can't start it that way, Mike. And I think his experiment's over, too. He's already dropping matches. It doesn't look like he's got any feuds. He's got no WrestleMania moment. He'll probably be in the Battle Royal and get thrown out. I don't see much.
I don't see much for him either. And look, It took them a while in NXT to get him to the point where they were putting him with Indy Hartwell. You know, I mean, at one point they were making, well, Indy Hartwell was with Gargano and LeRae, and they were going, well, he's trying to break up Gargano, the group, you know, because Indy Hartwell was kind of playing it to where she was kind of, you know, trying to play both sides of the fence, right? So, yeah, it took him a while to get to that point. He's basically Norman the Lunatic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is the thing. You could say what you want about storylines and gimmicks and things like that, but sometimes they're so crucial. Mark Calaway was going nowhere as many gimmicks until he got to be The Undertaker, and now he's legendary. Triple H was going to go nowhere as that blue blood character, and now he's legendary. Shawn Michaels would have had an average career if he kept staying in the tag team. They'd be doing indie events still as the Rockers. Now he's legendary. The Rock was heading to not a good place as Rocky Maivia. Now he's legendary. The Ringmaster was heading nowhere until he became Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now he's legendary. It's just a gimmick change sometimes, just the smallest change that makes it important. And some of these guys, before you throw them away, if you believe in them as a performer, you say, well, your in-ring is fine, but you're not getting over with the fans, so let's see what we can change to make you get over with the fans. Had they tossed away Rocky Maivia, had they tossed away the Ringmaster, had they tossed away the Blue Blood, they wouldn't have had Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and The Rock. So don't toss these guys away. Reinvent them. But the WWE is very bad at that lately. I do want to cover SmackDown quickly because, of course, we got a couple of big things happening on SmackDown. The biggest thing, I guess, besides the bloodline angle furthering, is that Rey Mysterio finally struck Dominic. I told you, we all told you on the show what was going to happen. It was going to be the disrespect of his mother, Rey Mysterio's wife, that was ultimately going to cause it. It did. Dominic made, in my opinion, his first mistake. Or the WWE at least made their first mistake with Dominic, because I was hoping against hope that Dominic's first reaction would be shock, which it was. The second reaction would be sort of a smile, like, I knew I could do it. I knew I could do it. Instead, he looked like, oh, my God, now I really do have to fight him, and I don't want to. I don't think that's the way you should handle that. The way you should handle that is, good, I got what I wanted. Because that's what he wanted. Now to make it look like he's afraid of getting what he wanted is kind of dumb. I know you're trying to make your dad look good. I know you're trying to make Ray look good. The initial reaction is fine. But as soon as that initial reaction wears off, when he's walking up the rampway, he shouldn't be walking up the rampway in shock looking like he's going to cry. He should be walking up the rampway kind of smiling and nodding like, told you I'd get what I want, because that's going to get you more heat. That's going to get you a lot more heat. So I think there's a mistake there, but the crowd popped big. And I got news for you. The crowd did not pop big because Rey Mysterio was so legendary, even though he is. Because they hate Dominic. You can say whatever you want about Dominic Mysterio. He has it down. The crowd despises him. And I'm not giving credit to Rhea Ripley because the crowd doesn't despise Rhea Ripley. The crowd, half the crowd cheers for Rhea Ripley. So it is Dominic. It's not Rhea's involvement with Dominic. It is Dominic. And he's done a masterful job. We probably should have talked about his future. I think he's headed to bigger and better things, Mike. He's really shown that he can get the crowd in the palm of his hand here.
Right, and he's not just coming off as the smug, you know, guy. He's coming off as ungrateful.
Right.
You know, ungrateful to his Hall of Fame, legendary father, and ungrateful to his mother, you know. That's how he's come off, and that's why people aren't liking him. And this is true heat. This isn't the go-away heat like we've seen at times in the past. You know, this is true heat. People are hating him for what he did to his mama for how he's been treating his dad. They're hating him. And that's a great motivation.
Yeah, did you hear the pop of the audience? The audience reacted like, he'd won a belt when all he really did was just strike him once. So, Todd, I mean, this is working on all cylinders.
I'm absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with the Mysterio angle, and like you said, it's been for a while, it's the Rhea and Dominic show here. You know, like you said, we're going to see them move away from the Judgment Day down the road.
Yeah, you could easily say, well, Rhea's helped bring Dominic along as a heel, but that's not even true, Tom, because half the crowd cheer for Rhea. Nobody's cheering for Dominic Mysterio.
I have not heard one cheer for Dominic Mysterio, and Dominic, that crowd, I jumped out of my seat. I've been a fan for a long time. I think I knew it was coming. And the dramatic, there was no dramatic pause. There was no, like, he just finally, like, when he disrespected his, you know, Ray's wife, his mom, he was like, okay, that does it. It's all I can stand. I can't stand no more, and socked them. And the fans just went absolutely nuts. That's the white heat that you don't see you don't see this in wrestling anymore that they used to get in the 90s and even the late 80s to a certain extent. Dominic's got it. Dominic's got it, and they need to – I don't think they need to fine-tune it anymore. I think that at this point, Dominic would need to break away from the Judgment Day and, you know, do
Yeah, you know
thing.
What's brilliant about this Dominic thing is I thought they blew it with the comedy angle of ex-con Don, because I'm saying to myself, oh, God, they're going to play it for laughs now, like he was in a local jail for 2 hours. And now he's an ex-con. But he's managed to turn that into not funny. He's managed to turn that into, like, just one more thing that he's smug and lying about and he's insincere about and really thinks he is tough because of that. And it's paid dividends. It's been a remarkable thing. This is the best thing that's come out of the Judgment Day. Nobody cares about Finn Balor. I'm telling you, I'm sorry. You're a Finn Balor fan, I'm sorry, but nobody cares. They've had to now make him go to this demon thing again to even care about a rematch with Edge. By the way, I heard that Edge is going to come out with the possibly at least Gangrel from the Brood at WrestleMania. That's what I'm hearing. But again, nobody really gives a damn, and Damian Priest doesn't even have a match at WrestleMania. He'll probably be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. So what is it that they have to offer? Are they getting gigantic pops? No. Rhea Ripley is. Dominic is. They need to move on. Keep that going. That's fine. And especially if you're going to feud with Charlotte Flair and possibly Andretti down the road, just leave the Judgment Day. They can just be smug about it and be like, we don't need anybody. We don't need Finn's help. We don't need Priest's help. We don't need anybody's help. We're better than all of them. We're better than everybody. Doesn't mean they have to. Let them switch even brands if they have to. Whatever you got to do. But they don't belong in the Judgment Day anymore. They've transcended that a while ago now. And now you got, especially if Rhea wins. Rhea wins the belt. She's got the belt. Dominic's going to be, by her side. You don't need any more than that. You don't need Finn and Damian in that. You just don't. Austin Theory. Well, my prediction is, I've heard that John Cena's sticking around for a few matches afterwards, so could they potentially put the title on John Cena for a day and have the rematch? Of course they could. Will they? I don't think so. I've said before, and I'm going to stick to it, John Cena had his moment, remember, where he went backstage and The Undertaker said, what's your name? And basically endorsed him and said, you did a good job out there, kid. I think this is John Cena's moment to do that to Austin Theory. And I think maybe we're going to see a different Austin Theory after WrestleMania. I think all of this hyperbole and I'm the best and I'm this and I'm that, John Cena is going to say, that was all to cover up that you were a scared young rookie. And you were scared to death and hiding behind your own words. You know who else did that? I did that. I was exactly where you were, saying the same things you were saying. And the reason I was saying it, I was scared to death. And I kept trying to psych myself up that I'm that guy. I really am that guy. And that's why I did it. And then I came to the realization, until I just stop and become myself, I can't go any farther. And I think we're going to see Austin Theory in a very short period of time. Very short period of time. Before SummerSlam, turn face. I really do. I think the crowd will get more behind him as a face. I think they see him as somebody who could potentially not maybe reach the heights of John Cena, but be a John Cena-esque type character. And I think that's probably what they want of him. So I think Theory has a big future here, Mike, probably as a face, though.
Right. And think about this. John Cena is not going to be around too much longer because if you're following him, he's got a couple of things in the hopper. He's got the second season of Peacemaker coming up, and he's got another show that they're doing about Amanda Waller that he's going to be a big part of coming up. So he's not going to be able to be around too much longer. Maybe you could squeeze one, maybe two more matches after WrestleMania. After him, but after that, that's it. You're gonna have to either put the belt back around. If Cena wins, put it back around him, Theory soon, or put it around somebody else. You know, because if he's about to shoot straight up the top of the card, almost to the top of the card, really soon, and he's gonna be shooting past the U.S. Championship. He's going to be talking about possibly, a world title run at some point.
I mean, there's two ways you could handle it, Mike. If you want Cena to basically pass the torch, then there's two ways you could get to it. One way is that Cena beats him at WrestleMania and says to him, look, told you weren't ready for this. Told you, all your stuff's just hyperbole. You're just, you're a young, scared kid trying to psych yourself up that you're something great. And in reality, you are something great. But you're not gonna be able to achieve it until you become who you really are. And then if they have the rematch, maybe at Backlash, and he beats Cena back for that belt, and Cena endorses him then and says, that's what I told you. Now you are worthy to be a champion. Then that's it. Then that's probably when Theory flips. That you could do it that way, or you could just have Theory win. I mean, either way, it works. Depends on John Cena's schedule and what you want to do. I would love to see the first one, but at the same time, it's a little outrageous to have John Cena come back at his age and his lack of actually wrestling lately and beat Austin Theory. So we'll see. Either one of those could work out, Todd, but I do think Theory has a very, very bright future in the next coming year.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Austin Theory here, he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be a major player on the main roster. Maybe one day you'll see him be in the upper card to a main eventer for the Universal Championship or the WWE Championship. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think at some point he might be an actual title holder, and maybe going to take a couple years, but I think he's going to get there, Tom.
Yeah, he definitely has a lot of potential. And again, I didn't, you know, a few weeks ago, I wasn't really feeling it, but he's Austin Theory's starting to come into his own, and he's starting to change my mind, which is a good thing because it seems to be the general consensus as well that he's. I don't think John Cena is actually going to beat him. That's not going to happen. And if John Cena is going to stick around, then it's going to be for to keep giving Austin Theory that nudge forward into,
yeah, giving him the rub a little bit. Yeah, very possible. I know we didn't rate SmackDown. We will very quickly. I just want to do one more person, and that's Gunther. I'm sold with Gunther as a worker. I like his work very much. You'll notice that Gunther does exactly what I said Karrion Kross does not do, and that is Gunther undersells. And that makes him look tougher, and it makes him look harder to beat, and it makes him look like a real force. Even when he's in there against a Drew McIntyre, he's not overselling. So Gunther understands that. His main problem is he is terrible on the mic. Terrible. And I don't know how much more this snug, stuck-up foreigner, I'm better than everybody else because I take my sports very seriously or whatever. I don't know how long that's going to hold. It's not going to hold much past taking a loss. I know they got him set up for Cody Rhodes. That is going to be the feud. After that, I'm not sure where this goes. I think Gunther's future is very much up in the air, Mike, depending on a lot of things, depending if Cody wins, which I'm assuming he might, and depending on where they want to go with this. But I think they may have to modify the gimmick a little bit because I don't know if for another year of this, he's going to have the same heat.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And that's the thing. I mean, of the three guys in that group, the best guy on the mic is Kaiser. You know?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's the best guy on the mic. He's a big enough guy that if at some point they want to split him off from that group and make something of him, he has enough charisma, he has enough mic skills, and he has enough ring skills that they could probably make a mid-card, upper mid-card and lower main event guy out of him, you know, out of Kaiser.
Yeah, and that's why they keep handing Kaiser the mic, you notice. Even when the group is together, Kaiser usually gets the mic. They know that. They're fully aware of that. And by the way, Cody Rhodes did another excellent job of making Ludwig Kaiser look very good this week. Cody is very good at that. I'll give him credit for that. Cody is not about, let me go in and squash somebody. Cody is definitely about, let's give everybody a good match, a well-fought, hard-fought match. And it always makes his opponent look better. So good for him for that. I really like SmackDown this week. The Rey Mysterio thing popped the crowd tremendously. KO and Sammy popped the crowd tremendously. The Usos got nuclear heat for what they did at the end of the show. Cody Rhodes and Ludwig Kaiser was not only a good match, but this Solo Sikoa coming out really has my head spinning as to, is he going to cost Cody the match? Because why are they building up Solo Cody even so much as saying they're going to take on each other Monday if something's not going to happen. So in that respect, they've got me. There's a couple things, you know, on the show I'm not so thrilled about. You know, Lacey Evans and Zaya Lee being a tag team is just absolutely hideous. If you can't think of nothing better to do with Lacey Evans and Zaya Lee, you need better writers for your women's division. End of conversation. Terrible. They both deserve better than that. Both of them do. But I'm still going to give this an A-minus because this crowd was popping through most of this show, and I really thought it was pretty entertaining as a whole, Tom.
I agree. I thought it was an entertaining show. I mean, Zaya Lee and Lacey Evans becoming being a tag team is there's no words for that, honestly. I mean, just I just shake my head at that. The nuclear heat that the Usos got at the end of the show. It's just too bad that it ended on that note, and we just like, oh man, SmackDown is over already. I can't believe it. Kind of deal for me. The Dominic and Ray thing it's been the best segment, honestly, I've seen on SmackDown in quite a while. And for that, I'm going to go a little bit higher, and I'm going to give it a flat A.
Okay, you know, I don't think it's as good as a Bloodline angle, but it's been a good angle. Todd, what's your rating on SmackDown this week?
I'm going to give it an A-minus as well.
Okay, so, I mean, listen, it wasn't perfect, and yes, the Zaya Lee thing is terrible. There's no question. Zaya Lee and Lacey Evans have been mistreated something awful. That's called Who's Left in the Locker Room. And Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler coming out and that whole nonsense. Ronda Rousey doesn't look like she wants to be there anymore, which is too bad because she's actually developed into a pretty good professional wrestler. She went from I'm not very good at all and I'm living off my name to I'm actually pretty good. What's your rating this week, Mike?
I got to give it an A-minus as well. And one other thing, we didn't get around to Alexa Bliss. We know what's going to happen, but the problem is when they bring her back, and now that we know that she's had skin cancer, mm-hmm. and she's getting over that, but she had skin cancer. Well, there's no way people aren't going to cheer her.
Yeah, but I don't even know if that's a problem because they're going to cheer Bray Wyatt anyway. They always cheer Bray Wyatt. They've cheered Bray Wyatt in every one of his incantations from the cult leader to the Fiend because it's cool. You can't. It's very hard when your face is the coolest guy in the room, your heel is the coolest guy in the room, and Bray Wyatt's always been the coolest guy in the room. So I think that's fine. They're going to be a face group anyway, I'm pretty sure. Great SmackDown this week. Everybody enjoyed it. We will be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report, and of course Friday will be our big WrestleMania prediction, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.